A military maxim holds that no battle plan survives the first contact with the enemy. In just over a week of fighting in Iraq, U.S. forces are within 50 miles of Baghdad. The air campaign has weakened Saddam Hussein's grip on Iraq, and allied armies have suffered relatively few casualties. But supply lines are stretched, and Iraqi resistance has turned out to be more stubborn than expected. NPR's Mike Schuster examines the pluses and minuses of the first 10 days of war in Iraq.
U.S. and British senior commanders are unanimous in their insistence that their war plan is working and that they've encountered little so far that they didn't expect. In fact, says Simon Henderson, a British expert on Iraq, much has been achieved militarily in a very short time.
Where they've got to so far is 250 miles north of Kuwait. This is a long route when you can be attacked at any mile along that way. And in terms of battle casualties, the total figure is still incredibly small for a week's worth of fighting by such a large military force. And the losses in terms of equipment are also very small as well. This talk of being thinly stretched and talk of being undermined by harassment by Ba'athist militias is a little overstated.
All the same, weather, logistics problems, and Iraqi resistance have had an effect. Commanders on the ground in Iraq say they did not expect Iraqi militias to fight as they have. Despite taking significant losses, the Iraqis have displayed a clear strategy to avoid fighting against U.S. armor head-on and to attack the long movement of troops and supplies behind the front in order to slow its advance and force the Allies into a kind of urban guerrilla warfare they had not planned on. The Iraqi strategy is working, as embedded journalists such as Andrew North of the BBC reported 2 days ago from Nasiriyah.
That certainly seems to be the risk that they're facing, that they are going to be drawn into that kind of street-to-street fighting. But I think because of the resistance they've faced here, I think they're feeling they've got no choice. And they're admitting that they have ended up having to put much more effort into the security situation, as they describe it, than they expected. They thought it would just be a case of taking the two key bridges over the Euphrates and ignoring the town. It just hasn't worked out like that.
That in turn has slowed the push to establish a second prong north of Nasiriyah toward the Tigris River town of Al-Kut. That would set in motion a possible assault on Baghdad from both the southeast and the southwest, where the 3rd Infantry Division has been waiting for 5 days now near Karbala. Unexpected Iraqi resistance combined with bad weather has also interrupted the long supply line from Kuwait, leading some critics to conclude the invasion of Iraq has already bogged down. The British Chief of Staff, General Sir Mike Jackson, bristled at that characterization.
Armies cannot move forever without stopping from time to time to regroup, to ensure that their supplies are up. And even, believe it or not, soldiers need a bit of sleep from time to time. So this bogged down is a tendentious phrase. It's a pause whilst people get themselves sorted out for what comes next.
What comes next, obviously, is the Battle of Baghdad. Given the trouble Allied forces have had with small cities like Nasiriyah and Najaf, Baghdad is certain to present far greater problems. U.S. commanders believe they need a lot more troops inside Iraq to mount an assault on Baghdad. By the end of the first week of the war, there were just under 100,000 U.S. and British ground troops in Iraq, clearly not enough yet to cause the government of Saddam Hussein to topple. Plans now are to double that in the coming week. And the Allies are busy preparing airstrips deep inside Iraq as forward operational bases to help deliver the timely resupply of food, fuel, water, and ammunition. But there is a deeper political question lurking beneath the details of battle plans, whether enough Iraqis will eventually welcome those they now consider invaders and view the war as a liberation rather than an occupation. Defense analyst Paul Beaver says achieving that will require a change in tactics. He favors the closer contact that British forces have had with the civilian population in southeastern Iraq, honed in Northern Ireland over many years, to the current American approach of keeping the population at arm's length.
You have still got to try and create the benign environment, and you can only do that by going out there. By staying in your vehicles, by staying in your armor, you're not going to create that benign environment. You're going to still create the impression that you are, in fact, nothing more than an invader.
But there's a more troublesome problem here, say some critics, among them retired U.S. General William Nash, who played a key role in the Bosnia operation.
There was some miscalculation as to the whole feelings of the Iraqi people, both with respect to the regime and the respect to outsiders coming to their country. They have not cheered and welcomed with flowers and fruit the arrival of Allied forces.
Nash lays the blame on the civilians in the Bush administration, not on the senior military commanders.
In the civilian component leadership of the American military and elsewhere in the American government, there was an implicit, if not explicit, assumption that the forcefulness of our logic would prevail and people would sweep to our sides. I think that has been something that many of us have been cautioning all along.
The administration is hearing nothing of this. Friday at the Pentagon briefing, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld said the critics are too impatient, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Richard Myers, defended the overall approach.
I stand by this plan. I think General Franks put together a good plan. I'll give you a definitive statement. I think it's a brilliant plan. There's branches and sequels to everything that might possibly happen, but the plan is sound, it's being executed, and it's on track.
And the one person who is most important in all this, President Bush, is said to believe that all the talk of difficulties, miscalculations, and false expectations is silly. With British Prime Minister Tony Blair standing by him last week, the president chafed when he was asked how long the war will take.
However long it takes. That's the answer to your question, and that's what you got to know. If I can,
it's a matter of timetable, it's a matter of victory.
And the Iraqi people have got to know that, see? They got to know that they will be liberated and Saddam Hussein will be removed no matter how long it takes.
Still, expectations about the length of the war can have an impact in the wider Arab world. This war is already longer than the ground portion of the Gulf War, already longer than the 1967 Six-Day War between Israel and its Arab neighbors. In another week, it will be longer than the 1973 Yom Kippur War between Israel and Egypt and Syria. For many Arabs, Saddam Hussein has successfully defied the Americans and the British. The longer he holds out in many eyes, the greater the respect he gains. Mike Schuster, NPR News, Kuwait.